This is Karen Brewster, and today is October 9th, 2018, and I'm here with Betsy Albecker at her home in Skagway, Alaska, and this is for the Klondike Gold Rush National Historical Park and Bering Land Bridge Climate Change Project. Thank you, Betsy.
You're welcome.
Before we get into the meat of the conversation, can you just give me a little bit of background about yourself? Were you born here in Skagway?
Actually, I was born in Seattle, Washington, because the Army owned the town, and they were not having a pregnant woman in Skagway, and she had to leave. I moved to Skagway in April of 1945 when I was about 4 months old.
Okay. And your mother's name was?
Barbara Alice Dedman.
Okay. And she raised you here?
Four kids.
By herself?
No. Oh. She was married to my dad, Edward Kalinkowski, who was a sergeant stationed here during the Army occupation.
Okay. But yeah, your mom's family, though, goes
came
back
here during the Gold Rush.
Right.
1898, my great-grandmother arrived from California 2 days after Soapy Smith had been shot to meet up with her husband, George Dedman, who at that time was running a laundry service. But they quickly expanded. They purchased a building called Skagway Mercantile, and it was the Golden North Hotel. They transformed it. They moved it from this, where this house was,
okay,
and moved it over. And then my grandmother came up as a school teacher in the about 1916 or 17. My mom was born in 24 here in Skagway. My kids were born here in Skagway. My son was born right across the hall from where my mother was born in the same old hospital.
Wow, that's cool.
So,
and then your mother was a photographer, but you said her...
So was my grandmother.
Your grandmother.
My grandmother and my grandfather met because they had a mutual interest in photography, and all the new school teachers were new blood for the young bachelors in town. All the young ladies, she came up with three other young ladies, and they were all married within a year or two. Yeah. And stayed.
Yeah, well, it's pretty neat that women in your family as photographers. It's kind of unusual.
There's a family story behind that. My grandmother did not intend to work as a chambermaid. She did not intend to work as a waitress in the hotel. And she didn't like school teaching, and they did not like married school teachers. You were not encouraged to be a teacher if you were raising a family. Your place was at home, and she could do that. She did the overnight photography for the ships. The cruise ships stayed in overnight, but they weren't daily ships, once a week or maybe even a little less. I can remember back in 1953 and 54 going down to the Prince George with her, and she would pick up the passenger's film in the morning, take it home, develop it, then print it out, dry it, and the next day we would take it back down to the ship and hand them their photographs of
wow.
their trip.
Cool.
So that's what she did, and she also did framing, and they sold lots of Christmas cards. They would take a photo, and then the families would have their names
Oh, right.
put on them, order them that way. You didn't go down to the... There were no supermarkets or
right.
drugstores to buy Christmas cards in. So that's what she did.
Right. And then your mom continued that tradition?
Business. And then my daughter bought the business from my mother, and they just sold it last year because it was too intense. And the complications of hiring extra help to run a big tourist business in this town, or any town, that nobody was getting any family time.
Yeah.
So they sold it, and my daughter and I proceeded to have a really fine summer spending time with each other
yeah.
doing stuff, because my business is off Broadway.
Right.
So I'm not really impacted by the tourists themselves, just the people that work with tourists. And they're only available on slower days.
Right.
So mine is more of a call me up and I'll open the store for you.
Right, and you also keep winter hours in that way as
but
well.
I usually say, just call. I tried being there very regularly, and half my customers were calling anyway because it wasn't convenient for them.
Right,
one
see.
To four, they're working. They're not on lunch break or
right.
whatever. And I finally go, this is dumb. I live upstairs.
Yeah.
So just call me if you want to come in. It doesn't work for everybody.
Right.
But it especially works well for summer people because their schedules are so erratic.
Yeah.
And they're young enough not to worry about, oh, I might be interrupting her. You know, so many people, well, I just waited for your sign to be up and you to be open because I didn't want to bother you. Well, you know, look at what I'm doing.
You're remodeling a house.
And gardening.
Yeah. So you grew up here, but did you leave for a while and then come back?
Well, if you call Haines and Juneau and Fairbanks and Anchorage leaving.
Yeah, it's leaving.
Yeah. Always came back in the summers for my gardening.
Okay.
Out at the country place, 7 miles out of town.
Oh, at Dyea or?
Dyea Point, they call it. It's okay. On Naku Bay, around that point. It's on there. I'll show you a picture
okay.
in there if you're interested.
Yeah.
Very challenging, no fresh water. Had to haul everything to water everything. So I know what the climate was like then because I had a little. I ran through three different pickups. I could put 23 5-gallon buckets in one of them, and I would haul water once a week at least. I had a little shallow well dug out at my place. I had a little barren meadow spot that looked like it would be marshy and mucky, and it always was dried up by the 1st of June. It would be completely bone dry. And I would have to haul water the rest of the summer.
Wow.
And we very seldom got rain in the summer, which meant all the fruit trees I had to be watered every week, everything. And I had to build my garden beds because it was all on granite rock. So I would make dirt by bringing in sand and dirt from Long Bay and seaweed and leaves. And I came up with pretty good soil. But when I was taking care of my mom, I did not have time to go out there. I couldn't go out there and spend time, and
right.
the grass invaded everything, and now it's solid grass. And we got wetter years.
So when did you start that out there?
In the late 1970s.
Okay.
Early 1970s. Late 1960s. I lose track of time.
And
by 1969, I was working on the foundation.
Of your cabin?
Yeah. And trying to garden. And I've got pictures that show just this nice big bare patch, and now it's all totally covered. I dug two wells, drilled, and they both hit salt water.
Oh.
My garden was on top of a bedrock that was pretty thick, granite bedrock, and there was just no place for the water to go. So in the spring, it was all wet and soggy, and I thought I could dig a well. My well was about 6 feet deep is all, and it would, like I say, first week in June, it would be bone dry and stay that way for the rest of the year. That's why I drilled, to
right.
get through that rock.
Right. But then you hit salt water?
The salt, it wasn't seawater salt water. It was just full of a lot of different contaminants. It looked crystal clear. It was gorgeous. It was 27 gallons per minute, steady, around the clock. I left the pump running for 3 days, hoping we would had just hit a
uh-huh.
bed of salt and would get to fresh, but we never did.
Well, so it was sort of like mineralized
mm-hmm.
from
requires,
the rock.
Requires osmotic-type filtering system,
yeah.
which when I got quotes, they wanted $7,000 back then. I think they've come down a bit, and if I ever got it installed, I could just buy new filters each year.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's too large a lump sum, and every time I thought I had, you know how it goes.
Yeah.
The refrigerator dies, the furnace goes, the car says, my turn.
Right.
Nickel and dime you to death.
Yeah.
So.
I keep hearing a ding, like your texts or something. Can you turn that off? I'm sorry, I didn't mention it before. I forget this modern technology.
I have to check and see if it's customers. That's what it's for.
Right.
Okay, that one I can take care of with a phone call.
So what kind of things did you plant out in that garden out there?
Started with potatoes. Potatoes and garden peas, a few carrots, and flowers. Lots of different columbine and some berry bushes, red currant, black currant, gooseberry. A lot of pinks. That's a dianthus that I could get off the beach, so I knew it did well in drought. Mm-hmm. I put in fruit trees and laboriously kept them going for many, many years, but never got any fruit. They didn't pollinate well.
What kind of fruit?
I put in apple trees mostly and some cherry trees, and I tried nectarine, or Japanese can't remember if it was a certain type of nectarine peach or it was something from Siberian plum, maybe that was it. Things that were supposed to grow well in really cold weather, but they did need a lot of watering. And just about the time we really started getting enough rain that it was noticeable, I had a porcupine visitor that wiped out all but three of the trees.
Oh, no.
I had about 12 that were starting to produce because people were keeping bees in Dai. They were starting to get pollinated, and they were starting to, and the wet, I didn't have to water them.
Right.
They managed to hang on and just... They were starting to grow and turn into real productive trees, and this little, it was a baby. I saw it on my beach, and I thought it was safe down on the beach because everything's salty down there. It's far enough away, I didn't think it would make it up to my garden, but it did because everything was girdled just about that high. Yeah, off
6 inches high.
Yeah. I have one sweet cherry left, which I don't get anything of because the crows come in. And by the time I realized I had a sweet cherry that had thrived, it was too big to prune back.
Oh.
And they come in and strip it and break the branches. I mean, it's just horrendous. But it's pricey to hire a carpenter to build something, and you can't just throw a net over it, not if you're my size.
Hmm. And so you said the weather started to get wetter that helped those trees. Do you remember when that was?
It's been in the last 10 years. It was already getting wetter when it's getting... We no longer had sometimes... I used to could count on a super dry, no rain in April, no rain in May, no rain in June, no rain in July. What they called rain would be sputter, sputter, and maybe a quarter of an inch, half an inch of the ground would get wet, but we didn't get Juno rain.
You didn't get the soaking?
No, never. I tried raspberries. They needed way more water than I could do out there. I have a few little ones, but that's all. I put in everlasting Egyptian onions that did fine until I tried to move some of them to town. I had a really good French sorrel that grew like crazy. I moved pieces of it three times and didn't know enough about the dirt to make it thrive in town, and there's nothing left of it. That's all been choked out by the grass.
Mm-hmm.
I had lots of daffodils out there, tulips in town. I had a really good garden in town. That one was easy because I had water.
Right.
I was called the crazy seaweed lady because I used seaweed around everything for several reasons. Heavy-duty mulch would keep down the weeds and keep them from drying out so fast.
Yeah.
Besides supplying nutrients, and all you have to do is watch 1 year and watch the grass, and the grass out here is like this, and the grass where you put the seaweed around the trees is huge,
so like
dark
two,
green,
like
from
two inches
to 12 or 15 inches. I grew up yarrow plant over there in my garden. Just one of these little wild ones that are scrawny along the side of the yard. If they get a foot high, you say, wow, that's pretty big. I had one that was over 6 feet high growing in my, and my nasturtiums, I had to quit growing because the leaves were so big you couldn't find the flowers because it was too rich.
Wow, so that was from your seaweed concoction?
Seaweed, and there's some real iron-rich dirt on the east side of Long Bay that I used to grab to, very heavy.
Yeah.
But it worked.
Yeah. So you would collect the seaweed from the beaches?
Yeah.
A particular kind of, and
no,
have you noticed?
Yeah, I can tell you what kind. The kind that the wind blows loose and it gets up on the tide line.
Okay.
If you haven't had a windstorm, you do not have seaweed in windrows. It's
right.
Got to blow in because it's loose, and it's very wet and heavy. And I don't touch it until it's dried out, because when it's dry, I can carry two buckets in each hand full
right.
of seaweed. When it's wet, it takes two hands on one bucket to lift, besides which you don't have very much. The Skagway seaweed is much better than most other places because of all the fresh water coming down and washes it. It's not too salty.
Okay.
If you're somewhere farther south, you really need to rinse it off well before you put it in your garden. But here we can get away with it, and I still rinse it somewhat.
Yeah. So you've been collecting seaweed since the late 60s?
Yep.
Through now.
Yeah, I still do.
Do you notice a difference, like different kinds, more or less, or it's coming out in different places?
It doesn't always lay on the beaches the same way, but that's because of the tides and the winds and the erosion along the riverbanks that make it lie in. What I have noticed in the way of climate change is when I built my cabin, it was usable in 1979. We could go walk, we would walk the low tide, super low spring tides mm-hmm. in April, get you down to a -4, and I have about a 10-foot strip right down in front of my cabin. It was bare sand. We used to laugh about it. It was kind of mucky, but I had a sandy beach front that you could
wow.
see three times a year if you were lucky, if it uh-huh. was daylight. And it was bare sand. Then it turned into ribbon kelp about 20 years ago. I was really surprised when in about 2005 or 6, you can't see any of the sand. It's completely buried in seaweed.
Hmm.
And it's the ribbon seaweed that looks like kelp, but it's not. But it doesn't have the big bulbous heads
right.
on our beach. The same thing went all the way around, because we would walk as far as we could down to the Dye Point or up to the head of our road. The seaweed has three layers. There's the yellow brown, which is what you used to get most of. And then there's a dark red, and then there's the ribbon. The dark red is, my information is, that's the kind that the natives like for dulse, and they pick it and dry it. But I didn't try drying it much. I was busy doing other things. And we would pick mussels, of course. Now, most of the seaweed that washes loose and comes up is the red seaweed, more of it than the brown. I couldn't tell you which is more nutritious. There were summers I never got any seaweed because we didn't get the right weather combination. It just didn't tear loose. There was one year when we had a couple of horrendous south storms with the wind really ratcheted up, and I filled the whole back end of my pickup with seaweed one year. We were able to drive down just south of the dump where the Temsco is now
mm-hmm.
and just load it in like that and stamp it down. I had so much seaweed, it was unbelievable. Only ever saw that happen once.
Was that just one big storm?
Big, huge storm, and the way it came in, it just laid in beautifully. There was nothing, no brush in it, no leaves. No, just this lovely clean, and it was spread out over the rocky beachfront, and just pick it up. Then we had hot sun, and it dried out.
Do you remember what direction the wind?
It was south wind.
It was
always a south wind storm that knocks the seaweed loose.
Hmm. Do you remember what year about
that was? I could look it up. It was somewhere in the late 70s, okay. Or early 70s, late 70s.
Okay.
I don't remember without looking at the
albums. No, just
the
general decade helps.
Yeah.
You know, something like that that happens.
My brother was married to his second wife, so that's when it was, right. Because she helped me dig it up. Right. And it was early in my gardening career out there, so it was probably around 72 or 73.
Okay, that's close enough that, you know, sort of when there's a rare event, kind of trying to put
it. It was very rare. Well, my mom made a Christmas card every year with photos from the family all year, and I've got a collection of them from 1947 right up to when she couldn't do it anymore, and I couldn't do it because she took up too much time.
Right, to take care of her.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that the different kinds of seaweed, it sort of has changed.
It's not all. When I was a little kid, my brothers and sisters would run around on the beach. We had tons and tons of these little blue snails. I don't know what kind they are. They aren't very big. They're not as big as my thumbnail. They're smaller than that. And they were only, I don't know if I can get the tides right for you. They were not on a regular low tide, or 12 foot or 10 foot. They were a layer lower than that. And it was 10 or 12 feet, maybe 15, that was just covered with these little things. There was no way to walk on that section of the beach without squashing them.
Hmm.
There were so many of them, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And the little tiny round coolie hat things, too, that don't get much more than an inch across, which are really tasty, by the way, but they're so hard to get off the rock and so tiny.
So they're like kuliag?
Coolie hat, Chinese hat. That's
what they
look like.
Oh, I know.
I don't know what
they're
called. Never looked them up.
No, I know what you're talking about.
I started going to school down in Washington in 1981 or 82. And at that time, we no longer had any of the little blue snails.
But you remember them when you were a kid?
For years. I didn't know. That was the first thing I noticed. What happened to all the little wee snails? They're gone.
Yeah.
There's none of them. Some years you get a windrow of mussel shells because there's a red tide that wipes everything out temporarily, and the mussel shells will come in thick and deep like that.
Like a foot thick? Wow.
The little blue mollusks came back temporarily in the 90s, but they weren't as thick. And now I don't see them again. But I wasn't spending lots of time out there.
Right.
There for a number of decades, I was out there just almost every single day.
Right.
But once I got my business on Broadway for 10 years, I was working 7 days a week and averaging between 110 and 120 hours a week in the store.
Right. And then you took care of your mom, which is a full-time job.
In 2005.
Right.
So there was a big period there that was just dead, 81 to 89.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. It's good to know what it was like back in the 60s and 70s. That's great.
It's not just climate change. It's also the glacial rebound that's coming way up and making. That's what makes the difference, in my opinion, as to how the seaweed lays in. You change the topography by 2 or 3 inches, and the current's different.
Mm-hmm.
And if the seaweed's loose on a super high tide versus just the normal, there's been more regular seaweed in for the last, almost every year since 2005 or 6. Almost every year you can count on finding seaweed.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that helped was down at the boat harbor because it'll lie in around the boat ramp to put your small boats in.
Mm-hmm.
But I early on decided that that was probably not a good thing for my food crops.
Yeah.
Because that basin is contaminated and the seaweed draws up trace elements, so it's grabbing the worst of the worst.
Right.
So when I couldn't get enough seaweed out at my cabin, I would pick that seaweed, but I used it out front around lilacs and flowers. I don't put it on my
food beds. I didn't carry it out to my cabin for my food beds. I did without seaweed.
Mm-hmm.
And I laugh when I watch people picking up seaweed that's wet, heavy and wet. I have a deal with the little boys that stay in my cabin in the summertime. They're not even close to teenage yet, and I swap them. This year I swapped them a tent, and they got me buckets of seaweed. They're closer to the ground. And they can pick it up clean. Clean seaweed is nice after a big storm, but usually Skagway has enough wind that the last few years seaweed's been blowing loose all summer long.
So speaking of wind...
Speaking of wind.
Is there a difference?
It's not consistent like it used to be. When I was a child, and even up into high school years, my mother would write us a note getting us out of school if we had one of those beautiful snow days with more than 3 or 4 inches of snow and no wind, because by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it would be rainy and wet and yucky, and you couldn't play in the snow. And she would send a note to school for all 4 of her children saying, my kids are needed at home today, and take us out to play in the snow. We did not get to do that every single year, but that was rare enough that she made a point of it. And you could almost make book on it that if it was beautiful snow in the morning, it was going to be a sloppy, wet mess in the afternoon. The south wind would come up, it would warm up and be a mess. The first time I saw snow on the ground from October to spring was after I moved home to take care of my mother.
So before that, it didn't last the whole time?
It never would last. It would either blow away or sometime it would warm up, and it's never thick enough snow either. You'd get a snowfall. A heavy snowfall was 4 inches. If you got more than that, boy, you took advantage of it.
Right. But when you moved back, what, 2005-ish?
Yeah, 2005. And I don't remember what year it was, but one of those years, we actually had snow that you could see in piles all winter.
Wow. Down here in town.
In town. And I'm just, how? This really looks weird. What's wrong with it? Oh, I know. That's the snow is still on the ground.
Yeah. And everybody talks about, you know, the temperature is warming.
It's warmer.
But
the snow stays on the ground. What seems to have happened? Well, here again, you get a difference of almost a month if you're a gardener, because you have the roses and the lilacs. And when do they come out? Do you have roses, Sitka roses, on the 4th of July or not? And one year, when my mother was a junior in high school, I'm not sure which year that was, she would have been about 17, 24, 34, so it must have been about 47. They decorated the gym the first week in May with apple blossoms for graduation.
Mm-hmm.
That's way early. What I have noticed that is spring is running late instead of early, but fall is running very late.
So does it overall give you the same length of growing season, or is it a longer season?
Well, this year I lost half my potatoes because I left them outside overnight to harden off, and it got cold enough to frostbite them. Mm-hmm. We never get frost in September.
So you got a frost in September, huh?
We got 3 of them, 3 nights in a row that were heavy duty enough to kill stuff.
Wow.
Not everything, but it got my... I thought they were still good. I didn't realize they were nipped. I brought them in and fine, put them in the porch, and the whole big flap, the majority of what I dug that I had waited to dig, started reeking. And I'm going, what happened? I left them. I've always left them out. I have never lost a potato to the frost because we don't. I brag about it to the tourists. We don't get heavy frost in September. It's always October before we get it, even if it's cold out.
But you mentioned the lilac and the rose. So are they blooming at a different time than they used to?
They're blooming later.
We've been having Sitka roses in bloom around the 4th of July for years. And the raspberries. I'll tell you what happens with the late spring, especially if it's as late as it was this year, is the plants that are acclimated still are kind of watch. I don't know what they watch, if it's the daylight. I'm thinking it's got to be programmed on the length of the days, mm-hmm. because it used to be very careful. You would get the gooseberries, and then you would get the raspberries, and then you would get this, and then you would get this. And several years ago, I took a picture of a bowl of raspberries that I had picked with a batch of potatoes I had dug. Never. Because when my kids were little, and when I had that store, there was never a raspberry in sight on late July. I would come home, if I was out of town, I would come home late June to pick the raspberry crop, because I'm fond of raspberries, yes. And I stick them in the freezer, so I watch them like a hawk. There were no raspberries to pick this year at the 4th of July. They didn't ripe until after the 4th. And then there we were. Everything was ripe at the same time. The currants, the raspberries. And it's very, very not fun for a gardener when all your stuff harvests at the same time and you've mm-hmm. got to deal with it.
Yeah.
Gooseberries.
Now, so all those berries, raspberries, gooseberries.
Red currants.
Red currants. They're all in your garden, or do some of them grow wild?
For me, they're in my garden.
Okay.
Blueberries are another story, because most of your people pick wild blueberries, and most people want to be the first person to pick a blueberry, and you want to get to your patch before anybody else robs it. So hardly anybody knows what a really ripe wild blueberry tastes like, because they start picking them in August, and when I was a kid, you never picked them until September, mid-September. You really wanted to wait until a little bit of frost had hit, because it doesn't hurt the blueberries, but it'll turn the leaves yellow, and if you're lucky, the wind will blow the leaves off, and it's really easy to find them. You would pick berries, don't you?
I do.
I can tell. But I haven't been out wild blueberry picking for a while. I have a really bum hip, and nobody wants to be slowed down. They're clamoring over the rocks, and all my favorite spots that we're close enough to go to, we've had so many hordes of visitors that they've all been discovered, and they're picked clean a month before I'm ready to go up and let's see what we've got for a crop.
Yeah, so is the blueberry picking up in the pass area up above tree line?
We used to go up to Glacier Station on the railroad when I was a kid. And then after that, you could go up West Creek out in Dyea, okay. Or drive up the road. Driving up the road was nice and easy. There were a couple of really killer good spots.
The road, you mean not Glacier, the highway?
Yeah.
And
there's still lots of them if you take the time and wander around. But the nice, easy ones, and the new bridge that they're putting in totally wiped out the closest one to town that I really scored on several years in a row, because I could just park my car just this side of the bridge and just 30 feet in, and I was in blueberries.
Yeah.
Oh, ho!
But, yeah, so the location of the berries hasn't really changed that much.
No. Mm-mm.
Okay.
Just the number of people trying to pick them.
Right.
And I did not notice a good crop this year everywhere I checked. There's still one place I can get to and check that most people don't seem to know about, but it was too hot for too long before we got the, or maybe they didn't pollinate well. Because we have a few wild bushes out at our cabin that we transplanted so we wouldn't have to go up the mountainside, right. But they didn't bear well either. And I think it was a bug thing. When the flowers were out, the bugs were still not doing well because it was so cold.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
But bugs is a good question. As a gardener, you must notice bugs.
Yeah, I notice bugs. And the other thing I want to make sure you get on your tape is the grass. Between the uplift of the glacier and the climate change, because grass loves water, both Long Bay Beach and our beach, not both, all three of them, the Skagway Beach too, they used to be all bare rock or sand, and they're not they're covered with grass way down into the tide area. The high tides aren't coming up as much, but the grass is what's bad, because when we were little kids, the first cabin my folks built was destroyed by a fire, which took out all the big trees that had grown right down to the beach, high tide line, which I can't even remember because I was so little. I was only 3 or 4 years old. All I can remember is all these big, huge trees just crisscrossed all over. And we played on the rocks on the beach because that was the only safe place for us to play.
Right.
And we just took off our shoes all year, all summer, and raced around on the rocks, back and forth and around. You can't see the rocks. They're covered in high beach grass, way down now. You really have to be very careful going down, and there's no racing around on them because the grass is, it hides the rocks so badly. And I notice when I drive by Long Bay now, even below the tide line, half the sandy beach is covered in high sawgrass. Well, I don't know if it's sawgrass, but it's
some
nasty.
Kind of
some type of that heavy-duty beach grass. Yeah.
Well, and you also mentioned that the grass invaded your garden.
Oh, that was lighter grass, clover.
Okay.
Clover grass.
And that's...
And it's just, it's matted right down, solid root. If you wanted to garden again, you would have to pry out all the rocks like I used to do. I said I gardened with the crowbar because I would move the rocks around and make a bed and then put the dirt in.
Right.
Never anticipating. But the grass didn't invade big time until we had plenty of rain, and then it started moving. The best story about the rain, and I still can't give you the things, my mom used to haul home cedar seeds from all over. Red cedar, yellow cedar. She wanted cedars to grow in Skagway. And this is not cedar country. It's too dry. So we, all her projects, I got to go help with. Extra hands, you know. Never got any credit for it, but I was there. So she would start a batch of seeds every spring and forget about them usually. And most of them would die, but there'd always be a few that would make it. And we'd go out and she'd just pick a few spots out on our homestead property. And she'd put 4 stakes around them, paint the stakes white, slip this little seedling in, and then we would water it every year, all summer. And we did this for 3 or 4 years, and we had 20-some cedar trees that actually looked like they were growing. But over the years, it dwindled down to about 18 or 19. When I first got home in 2005, we had 18 or 19 cedar trees, because that was one of the things. She would sit in the car, but I would still go out and walk around because they got bigger over our head. We couldn't water them anymore because she was too old, and I didn't have the right kind of car. And I'm not as young as I was way back either, clambering through the woods with buckets of water. But I counted the trees, and they all looked good. And they were growing, and they started putting on shoots like this. Well, the only way they can, 18, 20-inch shoots, you don't do that without water. And we were not watering them. So about 3 years ago, might even been 4 now, I have to date things. I had cancer in 2014, and this was after I had cancer. So, you know, it wasn't more than 4 years ago. It was probably 3 years ago. She was interested in trees. She's a weaver, cedar bark and everything. I said, oh, we have cedar trees out there. And she wanted to see the cedar trees. So we went out and we started counting the cedar trees. And up on the north side, we found 5 more little cedar trees that were only 3 feet high. I mean, they were little guys.
Yeah.
There's no seeds on our cedar trees. Nobody's planted a cedar tree there since Mom and I planted them. So I really studied them, and I walked, and every one of them had 4 stakes around it. So I said to myself, remember when we went to Iceland, and the only way they could get the birch trees to regrow was to fence off the land? The roots would be 200 years old, but they were getting eaten down every year by the sheep that were all over Iceland. I said, these cedar trees have been just hanging on till we got enough water in the air in the summer. Now they're growing. Yeah. That's the only way they can be growing.
Wow.
Because there's still no seeds on any of those trees. I don't know if they need more water or if they need to reach a certain age of maturity, which is slow because of the dry conditions. Mm-hmm. But that is my final yes, we are getting way more rain than we used to.
Mm-hmm.
Way more. I even planted a couple of fruit trees out there last year because I knew I didn't have to worry about watering them because it's been so wet.
Yeah.
And I think it's a permanent change. Wow. I really do, because it's still dry in April and May with the wind, so you lose stuff because you're thinking it's too cold to water, and the plants are just, this is sandy soil, and the water just goes through them like that. You've got to water at least twice a week when you've got that.
Mm-hmm.
Preferably three or four times. It doesn't stay wet. I planted honey berries, so I didn't have to go hiking for berries. I put in sweet cherries, and I've got three pear trees and just all kinds of stuff that would not have produced 30 or 40 years ago. They just simply couldn't.
It was too dry.
Too dry.
What about temperature?
We used to have some hot nights when I was in high school because I'd sleep with my window open and listen to the guys racing their cars around. But and I think our hot weather was hotter and our cold weather was colder, but according to some of the records, that's not really true. But I think we had longer spells because we would go, like one summer, we were up at Lower Lake every day swimming 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, you didn't swim up there until the snow was gone and the water could warm up.
Right.
Now I find out you can get a wetsuit for under $100, and the girls go up and swim from one end of the lake to the other in their wetsuits. It doesn't matter if it's warm.
Right.
There. And the cold weather was definitely really cold. We would get several super cold spells when I was a kid because we had to walk to school. It was one-car families, and Dad had the car. All the families.
Right.
And you weren't allowed to stay at school unless it was below zero with your lunch.
Oh, so
you had to go home. You had an hour, you know. So.
And was it more windy then, or less windy?
It was always windy in the afternoon. You just knew it was going to be windy by the time you got out of school most of the time. That was just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't, it was wow.
And now it's different?
Well, this summer was, but it was weather pattern up above that caused it. I don't remember ever seeing a spell that long without any wind as what we just had.
Yeah.
My son and his wife were here for her first trip to Alaska. They were here 10 days, and we'd already had an unseasonably long no wind spell. And today's the first windy day we've had. This isn't wind.
No.
But it's not dead calm.
Yeah.
The last long spell I remember is I was a bartender back in the 60s, and that big, huge rock came down off the cliff and got stuck in one of those big fuel tanks. In September, early September, I think it was, a fishing fleet was in, and we didn't have a breath of wind, and if they hadn't just filled that tank, it would have wiped out the whole town. And every day you're walking around, they wouldn't let any of the fishermen or anybody into the harbor because the slightest little spark would set that stuff off.
Yeah.
And everybody was walking on eggshells, and we went, I don't know, it was 5 or 6 days. It seemed like forever. You'd have to check the newspaper records somewhere for that because I was barmaiding. I wasn't writing down
stuff like
that. But I just remember the fishermen were not happy because most of them had already sailed south. And they couldn't even go down and check their boats.
Right.
And it was just, you could smell the gas in the air.
Oh.
It was horrible.
So that was that area that now is that rock slide? That was that?
That was, yeah, a big, huge, huge boulder came down, smashed and stopped right in the middle because of the fuel.
The fuel tanks were over there.
Yeah, and they moved all the fuel tanks immediately.
Yeah.
Maybe under a rock slide that comes down every year isn't such a good plan after all.
Right.
Let's just build a road to Juneau on this same side where we have all these rock slides. That's a better plan.
Right. You had mentioned Lawton Glacier?
Yes, Lawton Glacier. My family, my grandfather, my mom was a little girl. She was about 7 years old. And they took a little mop dog up with them and hiked up to Lawton Glacier, saw the glacier, were hiking back, and it was, I want to say June. This would be one of the stories that's on those tapes I was telling
you
about.
That you did with your mom.
That I may not have super accurately.
Okay.
What she remembered about the trip was they had a great horned owl following with them, and her dad, my grandpa, carried the dog all the way because they were all afraid that that owl was just going to swoop right in and pull the dog away.
Right.
So that was the memory on that.
But you said something about hiking up to the glacier and it being, people don't do that anymore.
Well, the glacier's melted so far back you can't even see it, even from the cabin. I took my kids up years ago when they were about 4 or 5 and we overnighted at the cabin. And we did hike up and they walked on the glacier and all then, but now it's a major expedition because you can't even see the glacier from the cabin.
Okay. So when your mom, they did it, it was an easy walk to get to the glacier?
Yeah, it was still down on the flat. That's how far back it's gone.
Wow.
All these glaciers around here, I take pictures of that one every year.
That's Face Mountain?
Yeah.
Or no,
Harding,
not Harding.
Mount Harding,
right.
Mount Harding.
Yeah, but it's interesting to hear about Lawton because it's farther out of town.
Yeah, and I think this was, you know, it might have been Denver Glacier that was closer. Whichever one is the closest. We stayed at Lawton and I took my kids up, and that one you used to be able to get right up onto too real easily. They've both gone way back. But I'm thinking Denver might be the one that you could hike to from town real easily, although I've never been to it because it had already melted so far back. It wasn't a fun day trip anymore. Just go to the glacier.
Uh-huh. Even,
what glacier?
Even if from the road, it's...
I don't know.
Yeah. Because when your mom, then they did it, there wasn't the road.
No.
They had
you
to hike
hiked.
From town.
You hiked along the railroad tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I guess maybe the train could drop you off... Or pick you up. I don't know if they did
that's how we did it for picking berries up at Glacier. And the tourists just dearly loved that because here we'd all be with those old Trapper Nelson backpacks with our berry buckets in them. Yeah. Oh, look, live Alaskans!
I was just thinking about that road going in, how that might have changed things.
It was great because... When the Parkies took over, the railroad went under when the road went through.
Right.
But I think, I don't know what all the politics were behind that.
Right.
Mine prices were down. It wasn't feasible to keep it running anyway.
Yeah, but I was thinking what it changed. You said now a bridge has wiped out a blueberry patch. What other things having a road...
The best part for most of us was we could get to medical attention.
In Whitehorse.
Now, the Canadian doctors can't treat us for anything. Mm-hmm. You can't, if you have a broken leg, you have to wait to get to Juneau, even if you're right there in Whitehorse,
right.
Practically. But for a while there, it was real handy. You could just go up there for all your medical stuff.
Right.
And you didn't have to wait for a long train.
We were starting to talk about insects and bugs.
Insects and bugs.
Because I know as a gardener, those are something you notice.
Up until about 4 years ago, this killer big elderberry bush out there, I brought it in from out at the landing. It was out on the rocks. That's what we call our homestead.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, it never got past 4 feet in height. Lucky to get that high, it would have... couple of berries, and the crows would break it every fall too, just snap off the branches. So I brought it to town. I felt sorry for it, and about 4 years ago in the spring it was infested with little
a lacewing aphid. And we're not talking a few dozen, we're talking several thousand. Every leaf is just covered with them. You can go outside right now and see dead ones still caught in the stuff on the shingles. I don't know where they came from. I cannot get rid of them. I tried spraying them. Wash them off with your hose every day, two or three times, and they're there. So that's one thing that I have noticed.
And have they affected the growth and productivity of that tree?
I don't know about the growth, but it still has tons of berries and flowers every year, and it's every year it's higher. I didn't know they could get higher than your roof line, but it just keeps going. But they just make a secretion, a real sticky little yucky thing all over it. They put some holes in the leaves, but basically it's not damaging the fruit production.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying something new I saw online. Can't hurt, might help. Banana peels and aphids are supposed to be very incompatible. Call me in 3 years and I'll let you know. All my banana peelings are going out there. I also get a different kind of aphid, more of a mealybug type aphid columbines. I have purple columbines on the front bed. I didn't do much to the yard this year on that side because the highway is going to rip it all up and the sidewalks, and they can come back up to 8 feet into my yard if they want to. Have to replace the pavement, and they're going to replace the sidewalks too, and I have no idea of what sort of devastation they are going to do, so I'm just kind of seeing what's wintering and moving the best stuff over here.
So they're going to redo State Street?
They're going to do half of it 1 year and the other half the next year, and first they were going to do it this year, and then about a month before March or April, they told us, no, they changed their mind, they're going to do it in 2019, and now they've told us it's going to be 2020. But in the meantime...
Right.
So,
besides aphids, any worms or moths or...
We've got those black and yellow caterpillars. They're not the same ones, woolly worms, that we had when I was a kid. The ones that I had...
Woolly bears, those?
Woolly bears, they are... When I was a kid, they were seldom over an inch long, and they were much, much skinnier. They were a different brand of the same bug.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're huge, and they're all over the trees all over the town. I had some on my apple tree, but I took them off and put them in the freezer. Because I really didn't want them all over. I did not find them on any of the other fruit trees in mine. I have seen other apple trees in town that were just absolutely devastated with them.
Hmm.
The renter that stayed out at my cabin documented a ton of bug damage out there on various things. These same woolly bears were on the... some of the trees, the other one that starts with A, alder, your first cover crops. There was a different kind of worm on the cottonwoods and the alders. The alders usually get a little caterpillary thing that makes a tent, but not bad, but this year they were really bad. There was something on the fireweed. I tried, but I never got loose of work to get out there so that she could show me everything that was out there. But there were three different kinds of bugs that she noticed. And she's homeschooling her boys, and they're like 6, 8, 9. So they nature walk all the time and look at everything. The little boys have been playing on the beach and fishing. The little boys found eels, which I only ever remember two eels in my life finding. And we, when I was a little kid, we turned the rocks over all the time too, but we never found eels. Never. He's also catching fish, like we did. What other bugs have I noticed?
Are there any good bugs that have come around, or are all?
Yeah, there's a beetle that I hadn't seen. Nice big beetle, with bright orange markings. I took a picture of him because he looked like he was from Egypt, only a little bit scrawny, maybe only half Egyptian. And I thought, I've never seen this bug, so distinctive, so easy to find online. He's a good bug. But he wasn't a stranger. He's been in the area for over 20 years. How I missed him. So not very prolific yet.
Yeah.
A few of the gardeners knew him. A few of them didn't. When I was a kid and the raspberries were ripe in June and done. Part of the thing is there's more everbearers. But my bushes are descendants of those bushes that were when I was a kid. My blackcurrant bush is the same one that was there when I was a kid. So it's the climate, if they're the same bushes.
Meaning that?
Descended from the same. It's the same raspberry patch that I picked when I was a kid.
And it's the climate meaning what?
That the berries are ripe into July and August.
Okay.
Instead, because they were always done. But they obviously aren't June bearers because something about the climate is making them bear longer, way longer. And they're bearing for several months instead of 10 days or 2 weeks. It used to be, you know, that's it. So I don't know why that is. But we had beautiful, big, huge fruit spiders in them all summer long. You had to really be careful if you didn't like spiders. Mm. And since my mom had a phobia of them, all of us inherited that. Thank you, Mom. And especially we were the right height for them. So you really careful when you picked your raspberries because they were the same size as the raspberries. Mm. And you could get awfully close to them before you noticed them. And, bug, don't pick this bush. I don't see the fruit spiders in the raspberries anymore, neither over at the old house or at this house. They're just not there.
Interesting.
I saw two fruit spiders in a friend's raspberry patch last year, and I took pictures of them because I hadn't seen them. And I don't remember a summer that we didn't have them when I was a kid. They were just part of the end. You had daddy long legs. You had a few of the little woolly worms. Never an infestation like this. Grasshoppers. We had grasshoppers when I was a kid. We had tons of empty lots. All over town there were empty lots because you look at the old pictures and there were lots of old buildings, but there were lots of empty lots, and we would catch them. They were little grasshoppers. They weren't those great big crickety things. They were, I don't know, they were little brown guys like that. And you were always happy when you found them because that was good swimming weather, hot and sunny. And that's when you'd find the little grasshoppers. Haven't seen a grasshopper here since, I couldn't tell you, not since I was married and divorced and moved back home to really be here.
Right.
And that was in 1968 I moved back.
Is when you moved back.
And I was only in Haines then. I was coming back and forth, but I have not seen a grasshopper.
Since 1968.
Yeah, but I can consciously say, I saw a grasshopper.
Yeah.
Jellyfish. The fisherman, you need to talk to Andrew Byerly.
I have.
Yeah, okay. The jellyfish, because he was out on the water all the time. When I was building my cabin, I was out there all the time working on the foundation and stuff. Never saw a jellyfish in Skagway, ever, except maybe a dead red one once, maybe twice. That was all. And 3 or 4 years ago, I was out there in early spring. And now they're epidemic every early spring. We've got great big huge ones. They're clear. And they're from little bitty to great big, hundreds and hundreds of them. And so I asked the fishermen, and they said they've been there quite a few years. But I don't know how many is quite a few. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find someone that would tell me
Yes or no, we had them. We did not have them in Skagway when I was a kid, right. Because some of them would have been on the beach.
Right.
And we would have been watching for them because we were the family that watched for the hooligan and picked them up, and we watched for the herring runs, and we picked the mushrooms, and, you know, by the season. You do right. everything by the season, so you know. I didn't see jellyfish till I was living in Haines and we were on a fishing boat.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's, is it that they've always been out there in the ocean, but now they're only coming ashore, washing up, you know, there's...
These weren't washing. These are all swimming.
Oh, you see, all the ones you're seeing are swimming.
I got beautiful pictures of them, and they're huge. I know, because I know the size of the rocks they were up against.
Right.
Because I take pictures of that stuff all
right.
the time.
So you saw them in the water, not
yeah.
washed up dead on the
no,
beach.
No, never did see hardly any on the beach. But the jellyfish were another sign to me that, hey, oops, what's happening here?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the fish. So hooligan, the herring and salmon and halibut, or that's kind of...
Salmon and halibut, bullheads. We caught a skate one time out there. Got a cod, ling cod, not real common. Tom cods are real common. A Dolly Varden, they're all wild fish. And the oldest kid out there is a natural fisherman. He's been catching dollies.
In the ocean?
Yeah, right on
oh,
the
right, on
right
the...
off the beach.
Yeah.
It's good fishing there. We've got several good fishing
rocks.
So
has there been a change in any of those fish runs?
I don't know.
Okay.
You have to talk to a fisherman.
Yeah. I just thought maybe...
When I was a kid, my dad would throw a shrimp pot off the back of the freighter when it came in and then pull it up after the evening shift because they'd go back at 7 o'clock and work till 9 or 10.
Right.
And he would come home with dish pans full of shrimp. They're all big ones, two different kinds, but very big. And they always fished right through the egg-laying season, which I do not understand. And they still allow up here, which really annoys me. We have big sea snails out in Long Bay, but once too many people found out about them, the place got stripped several summers in a row, and I know there's a few have made a little bit of a comeback, but that's sad because as soon as they start making a comeback, that's the only place they breed, is the Long Bay area, and they will get stripped again because they take all the great big ones and they don't think of leaving any for reproduction.
So people collect them and eat them?
Yeah, they're delicious.
Now what are they again?
Giant snails.
Sea snails.
Oh. Very good. Very good eating. But you have to let them sit in cornmeal for 24 hours to process and
clean them out.
Clean them out. And they're a bit rubbery. And they're better if they're ground up like burger.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're very good in spaghetti sauce or anything that you would use a ground meat in.
Hmm.
They don't taste fishy at all.
Huh. Never heard of that.
But too many harvesters in too small an area.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned mushrooms. So you...
Yeah, we did mushrooms, too.
And have you... I don't know if you've continued, if there's a time...
Bad hip and long working hours.
Yeah. I'm just curious if there's been a change in the mushrooms out there.
Jack Einhoff is your best bet for talking mushrooms, or Terry Williams.
Okay.
Both of them, they go regularly, they can find them. I know what we used to get and the seasons that we got them, but I have not looked really hard for a lot of years now.
Okay. You also mentioned erosion. Do you mean the river, or you mean along the coast, or...
Erosion along the Dyea River is really bad. Watch a sandbar coming out towards our space. That would include the West Creek River coming down off that glacier. There's erosion along the sides of the road because I had one really good spot to dig my dirt from, and I also pick up rocks to make walls and stuff with, so I check every spring to see where the best flat rocks have come down,
mm-hmm.
which is caused by erosion. And there's places along the railroad that
come down every year that they go up in dynamite to make come down, because they are going to come down and they are going to knock a train off the edge.
Right.
So that's a major problem all along there. And if you ride the ferry, you can look at the old rock slide areas. You can see the avalanche areas. They're very conspicuous.
Right. And so they're consistent, or have there been new areas formed?
Not any really new ones. You've got the same spots year after year. Some of them don't come down every year.
Right.
That's the only difference. But there's one up there just south of the Gold Rush Cemetery that has been coming down since that comes down every year. They've got a big barricade for it. You just know it's going to come down.
Right.
It came down when my grandpa was a kid.
Yeah, I didn't know if the glaciers are changing, how that affects the avalanche areas or the rivers coming out of the glaciers.
The West Creek one had, you might not even have heard about it. I forget, something bad happened down in outside world when the West Creek Lake up at the glacier broke through and flooded really badly out there.
Yeah.
And it could have been devastating, but it was early morning before the tourists had hit the area, so nobody was hurt. But that brought down so many tons of dirt, and it's still washing out the road and stuff really badly. We have a lot of road machinery levers out there, and they fixed the road before the city or anybody got state, you know.
Yeah.
They hand did it. But I can watch the sand moving closer from the Dyea Flats down to my cabin, because I'm right out there.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, that laid a lot. And the trees, ever since that West Creek thing happened, there's been just so many dozens of trees, I even want to say maybe several hundred, that have washed out into the bay and down, and they just keep coming. And the Dyea River is busy being a braided river,
mm-hmm.
which is what they do. So, but there's so many snags out there, and the snags catch the sand, so it builds up and the grass moves in. So if I can hang on for another 20 or 30 years, I might get to see it right out front and just wave to people at the end of the beach.
So that West Creek flood, do you remember when that was?
No. Jeff Brady would be the
person. Oh, yeah.
Person
I mean,
talk
I.
To. Jeff's
thought,
got all that in his head.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering if that is an unusual event and it can be related.
Well, it was the glacial moraine that broke through, so
right.
You won't get that happen again for couple hundred years,
yeah.
At least.
So that was just a fluke.
It was a fluke. It was a one time. There was a lake up there and conditions got just right and it broke through. And they do that all over the world.
Yeah,
but they don't, you don't know when they're going to do
right.
them.
And that's what I was wondering. Is that a natural process or was it warming and the moraine got less frozen and broke through, or more water in the lake?
More water was a large part of it, because the glaciers here are all moving back. They're melting back.
So that lake got
bigger,
more full.
And there were more rocks to absorb heat. And who knows, it might have been a small earthquake set it off eventually, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Those things just, I don't think anybody's ever predicted one of them that
I
can find out.
I don't know if they can.
I don't think they can. Because it's how much water is running underneath to make a big enough all of a sudden, kashoom.
Yeah. I know there's some glaciers who do it like every, more predictably. There are some, I think, who.
I think you're right. Yes.
Depends on the.
The glacier.
Yeah, and the geology and all that.
Yeah.
Animals. You mentioned porcupine, and that's something I haven't talked to other people about. I keep forgetting about porcupines.
Well, we had this big, huge porcupine on the beach for about 4 years. And he was big. Oh, my gosh. I didn't know they came that big. And I think he didn't like the baby one there and chased him off the beach. The big one,
hung out down there. He never came up into the garden, or if he did, he wasn't interested in the low thing. He ate the plants that were on the beach for his salt, and he was very happy with it, and he looked like he should have had a vest with a gold watch on it. I mean, because he'd stand up there and just look around at you. I walked over to one of the rocks he was standing by one day to see if I could get an idea, and he was at least 3 feet high on his hind feet.
Wow, he's big.
Huge.
Now, is that typical, having porcupines around and that
to be
big?
That? No, I've never seen one like that. I talked to Art Johns from up in the Yukon.
Carcross
he said,
up there?
Yeah, that area. And he said that wasn't that unusual, but to me it was. And I remember more porcupines when I was a kid, but they're kind of cyclical. And usually when there's a lot of construction going on, you see more of them. But this last bridge job, I just haven't seen a ton of them. But usually you'll see one or two during the year, and I haven't this year. I haven't since the year of the baby, and I still kick myself for not getting rid of that baby, but it had big blue eyes and was so cute and was just scuttling around. And
well, yeah, so that you, but well, you remember when you were a kid, you saw more of them.
We saw more of them. Not tons of them, but you saw them regularly, and you'd see them on the side of the road regularly.
Mm-hmm.
What I did see this year that I have never seen before, so I asked Art Johns again, because he was a hunter and guide like his daddy, was a jackrabbit.
Oh.
And I did not know we had jackrabbits in this country. All I've ever seen are the cute little bouncy bunnies. You know, just regular rabbits.
Yeah.
Well, I saw this guy 3 times out at my cabin going across the road, and he was not a cute little cuddly bunny. He was a with big, huge ears and big legs and just going like, I'm going, really? And Art said, yes, really. So I defer to him on that one. Totally.
What about bears, wolves, coyotes, other kind of bigger?
Well, never saw a bear out at the landing up until about 10 years ago. And when I asked the hunters how come we have epidemics of bears now, they said that way back in the day, before the parkies took over, the local hunters would take at least a dozen bears out of Dyea every year, and that kept the population down. And when the parkies put a ban on hunting, they overpopulated. And we had a beautiful big grizzly that decided by our place, even without a creek and no fish, was a great place to live for the summer, or at least prospect. I ended up putting a couple of bear alarms out there to try and scare him off. Didn't work. And I was happily at the foot of a hill unloading my little blue pickup, and I'd reached in like this and took a great big thing out of it and turned around like this and put it under a tree and turned around like this. And right on the other side of the pickup was this huge grizzly walking up the hill. He was at the passenger side and I was down at the tail end. So I was like, and it was a little pickup, one of those little wee ones. I was here and he was there. And he had come up the road behind me all that way. And I hadn't noticed him, hadn't heard him, hadn't seen. I was focused on get this, put it there, oh my God. And I just watched him finish going up the hill and didn't do any more work out there for the next. That was the other factor for not gardening out there. That big bear was out there. I got pictures of him sitting underneath my lilac in bloom, eating dandelions from my deck because I was inside.
Right.
And walking past the little red car just below my cabin. I was on the upper deck, thank you, Lord. And I just didn't think it was a good idea to be out there.
No.
Not even.
Yeah. But when you were growing up here, was there...
No, I never saw a bear in my life.
And you as kids weren't warned about being careful?
No. There were no bears out there. And I still say, we don't even have a creek. There's no water. There's no fish. Why would bear... I smoked salmon every year in the 70s for about, I started in the 60s, 8 or 10 years, and I had a smoker out there, and I would set my salmon out to dry after you brine them for 24 hours out there at my cabin, and do them in a cold smoke 24 hours. Never saw a bear. Didn't worry about it. You couldn't pay me enough to try and smoke fish out there now outside like that because there's so many bears in Dyea.
Yeah. What about around town when you were a kid?
No, I never saw a live bear in my life.
Wow.
We heard one time that there was a bear up at Lower Lake, but nobody ever actually saw it. Maybe one of the hunters. I don't know. But all this bears in town, bears in the garbage, watch your, don't put anything in your compost. Like, excuse me, give me a break. There's no bears here. Well, there are bears here. But when one of my clerks came down, she was living in the cabin over on the hill right there, just the other side of the railroad tracks. She comes bouncing in the store. A bear, a bear. There was a bear peeking in my window. We're going, yeah, right, Kathy. You can't snow us. She really did see a bear.
Right. And so you don't think that's climate change. You think that's because there's no hunting anymore?
Yeah, and the road makes super easy access now. If you're a bear, good grief, or a moose. Moose have come down over that. We had mountain goats is what we had.
So you used to have mountain goats around here?
Still do.
You still do, okay. Yeah. That hasn't changed.
Trophy-sized mountain goats, good mountain goat country. We don't have local deer. But there have been a few, very few instances of deer coming in. There again, the hunters would know more about this stuff than I do. I have seen lynx. Lots of people have seen lynx. You don't see a lot of them, but they're here. They live here. Coyotes. My dad was part of the group that poisoned out the wolves back in the 50s so they could plant deer here.
Oh.
They at the time, they thought that was how you did it.
Right.
It didn't work at all. But... So I remember growing up when I was a little kid listening to the wolves howl out there in about 1953 or 54 was the last time we got to hear that.
Yeah.
I might be off by a year or two.
Yeah, well, that was
in the mid-50s.
The 50s was when they did that wolf bounty all over.
Yeah, and they just exterminated them. I think there are wolves around here again now, but they certainly aren't as vocal as they were when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They're much more shy. Mm-hmm. At least in this area.
What about birds? Different birds than there used to be?
Not nearly as many of anything. Nothing. And there again, I didn't have a digital camera. I wasn't a serious watcher. I just kind of took some notes and marked things. But Hooligan Run in the spring, I can remember staying out there and the raft of seagulls and ducks would be two-thirds of the way across the bay over to the other side. I haven't seen I have not seen congregations of birds like that since I got done with my business in the 80s. I don't know when they quit being that huge, but they just aren't.
And
there.
Is that Hooligan Run on the Skagway River?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dyea River.
Dyea River?
Usually Dyea River.
Okay.
And they had a big Hooligan Run a couple years ago, but the birds were not out there like I remember them being. And we used to get more eagles during that and so many different kinds of ducks. But the seagulls. And so noisy. They don't shut up at 3 o'clock in the morning either. They just took turns. You had your day birds, your night birds. And it was every spring they came in like that. So I watched the birds. And I see various ones, but I'm not a good person to say, oh yeah, there's way more of these or that. All I know is that there used to be a lot more bird call around there. And I have noticed over the years, these last 10 years, there's been more predator birds, small hawks, goshawks, hanging out there. But that doesn't mean they weren't there before. It means I didn't notice them before.
Right. You did mention the crows.
The crows were not ubiquitous when I was in school, high school here, when I was growing up. You would go over to the city dump, which was over at the mouth of the river where Temsco is. You would see seagulls.
practically all seagulls, maybe a raven or two, but you didn't see flocks of crows. The crows didn't start really invading the town until you had more than four cruise ships coming in regularly, and that meant more garbage all the way up because they used to throw a lot of the food stuff overboard. Mm. How do I know it would float in on our beach? Sack of onions, sack of oranges, just food garbage.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that's what brought the crows, but it certainly didn't hurt. And all of a sudden, you've got crows here all summer, every summer. I grew up in this house, and my bedroom was upstairs at the far end, and under the eaves, barn swallows nested every year.
Mm-hmm.
And the little babies would start cheeping about 3:34 o'clock in the morning, which I really liked. I mean, the swallows eat mosquitoes, and they fly, and they're gorgeous, and they were all over town. Well, I moved into the house, the other side of that, it's got stucco on it. My grandma gave it to me, and when we refinished the outside, I put in a little nesting box out of glass so
right.
we could look at them from the inside, but so they would be safe.
Yeah, cool.
And I didn't notice any this year, but I don't go that way because of the tourists, so I don't know if they nested. They've been a little iffy the last couple of years, but there hasn't been a swallow nesting in there
in this
for
house.
Over 30 years. Because the crows can reach the babies under the eaves. There's not safe nesting
right.
for them.
Huh.
And so you don't see swallows. It used to be when you went out in the evening, you saw swallows
right.
all over the place.
Oh, right.
You don't see them. Once in a while, you'll see one or two, and I keep wondering if there's a way we could build nests for them that the crows couldn't reach the babies, because
right.
I think once they're past being a I don't know if the crows get them when they're learning to fly, too, or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I would like to see the swallows back again. But that's how I really noticed the crows,
uh-huh.
was when I moved back home and I wasn't hearing the baby swallows, and they weren't there.
Hmm.
And that was crows.
Yeah. Now, do the crows spend the winters here?
No.
No.
They migrate. And I don't know where they go.
No, but...
But they have a good thing here, and there's probably 300 or 400 of them here every summer.
Yeah. I just didn't know if warmer winters meant the crows could stay.
They can, and I think there's a few that do, just like there's always a few. One year there was a hummingbird that stayed in Dorothy Jean's garage
wow.
all winter. There's always a few crazy birds. We have a real live city pigeon here right now. We got invaded by the oriental ones. What are they called?
Ring-necked doves,
because they go to my girlfriend's feeder regularly, and I've counted 16 of them.
Wow.
At one time. I got pictures of them, but she says she's gotten 18. And 3 years ago, they were still super bashful. All you had to do is pick up your camera and they're gone. Now, this year, they were all over town sitting there, coo, 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 coo. You could hear them. They are here
yeah.
to stay.
But they migrate out in the winter?
They stay all winter, and they have invaded successfully.
Mm.
Same with the terns. We always had terns, but we didn't have that nice colony down there that doesn't like tourists or anybody
oh.
near their babies.
Right.
Go away, kaboom!
And that's out at the beach
yeah.
by the ore terminal down
right.
there?
Right, yeah. Which is okay. They're okay birds. The crows are the biggies. The ravens we still have, and ravens are still not as social here. Juneau's my favorite place for ravens.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I thought I'd see more ravens here, because I think of ravens in Southeast, I associate them together.
The crows are so nasty to them. I think the ravens just kind of pull back. You see them more in the wintertime. They're socialized, too, though. They come. I put out a turkey carcass 1 year just to see which birds I would get, and I didn't have my camera charged up, and a raven couple came and demolished it right on my deck
yeah.
out there. And I'm going, you're not charged up! I need to do this again!
The other thing you mentioned was a cabin that had burned down in a fire. So I'm wondering about your memories of forest fires.
I don't remember any of the forest fires. They all happened before my time.
Okay.
What I remember is going all over the point, picking squirrel towns. We used to sell the pine cones to the Iceland. And there were all these snags everywhere, and now there's houses everywhere that we used to go, and it's all developed and grown up. The big one up on that hill.
By the Dewey Lakes.
My grandma remembered that for the next couple of years, the blueberry picking was outlandishly good. You just run up there, and it was great.
So there was a fire on that hillside during...
Took out a hotel.
During your grandmother's
teens.
Time.
No, it was before she got here,
okay,
I think.
In the teens.
Yeah.
But in your lifetime, there hasn't been any forest fires.
House fires, but the only forest fire we've had was over in Dyea on the east side where the road is, and it took out what looks amazingly small, but it took them a couple of weeks with the planes that pour water on, because it's so rocky and so many crevasses, it just kept burning and burning and burning and burning and burning. But we had the right kind of weather, and it didn't really spread anywhere. There's just this spot on the hill. If you're over on the flats, you can look over. You can pick it out real easily.
Yeah.
It looks like it was burned. And the vegetation is, first generation.
But even though for how dry it was here, there's not a big history of fires.
No. Partly because we have had good snow cover most years, and the years that we haven't, especially lately, it's been wet enough. We used to get the smoke from the fires. I remember one summer when they were having bad ones in the Yukon and close to Whitehorse, and it was just, the temperature went from the high mid-70s or above right down into the 50s and stayed that way the rest of the summer.
Because of the smoke.
Yeah. And all you'd see was this haze, this little ball going across. I think it could have been swimming weather, but we can't even breathe.
But that was unusual? Or was that a common thing for a while?
Not super common, but not super unusual. We used to, several years, we got thunderstorms regularly for part of the summer. And it would come down and rain for half an hour and stop. Not every summer, but... enough summers.
Because I'm wondering if the fires up in the Yukon may be changing.
They're lightning. The one that's going right now, that's been going for weeks now, has been, months now.
Yeah, if they're getting more fires up there, I wonder.
I don't know if they're getting more, but that one, it's just, they're lightning strikes, practically all of them.
Yeah.
And we don't get the lightning storms here.
No. That's a more interior...
Well, when we get fires in downtown, and the one that took out our cabin over on our property, that was set by a cigarette or something. It's careless people.
Right.
It's not lightning.
Right.
And we had a terrific thunderstorm through here last summer or the summer before with really wicked lightning, and we all thought there was going to be a fire. We really did. So
has the storm pattern changed? Like, are you getting more fall or winter storms or more severe storms?
I can't tell.
Okay.
I really can't tell. Just judge it by the debris that comes in on the beach. We've had, and by the number of trees that get knocked down over my road. we usually get one really bad windstorm in the fall that knocks trees down. And spring storms are kind of unusual, but most of the huge floods that we've had, I'm trying to think, were they spring floods or fall floods? They're usually spring because the ground hasn't thawed out yet. So if you get super heavy rain, it stays on top.
Right.
But my mom saw all of the, she saw 300-year floods here in this town. But I've managed to be out of town for every single one of them. Got pictures in the albums.
Yeah.
But I haven't been here for them.
But so, yeah, it's not like it's flooding more now than it used to?
I don't think so.
Because if it's raining more than it used to.
It's raining more, but we have way more dirt, and the trees are way bigger, and the glaciers are up way higher, so the rain has farther to go, and you've got a dike system everywhere, and so I really couldn't say. We're going to have some major slide issues on the Long Bay Road on the east side, because our just recently retired DOT supervisor that was here for the last 10 years did some crazy cutting of the trees on the side of the road for about a mile and a half and just chopped them off like that all along where they were holding the dirt, and already the dirt is coming down and the trees are hanging over the edge and everything is sliding. And so if we get one of those killer storms this fall, it'll either be this year, you know, it's going to happen.
Well, another one too, is it freezing up later, so there's a longer time where that dirt is not frozen and so is more likely to slide?
I don't know. Always figured that by Halloween, we will have, that week of Halloween, we will have snow on the ground here, but it might only be a quarter of an inch. Mm-hmm. And one year when I was in high school, it was 10 below zero. It dropped on
Halloween
morning, and that night we had the north wind going like crazy. It's like that Princess Sophia storm, which was early. But I only remember 1-0 Halloween out all these years. Mm-hmm. It's usually kind of nice, but you can expect that the snow will move down and then melt back, and you might not see it again till after Christmas.
I see, okay.
You know.
But when you were a kid, if it snowed in October, did it stay?
No.
No, you said it.
No, never snowed. Never stayed.
What about, did the temperature stay cold enough in the winter, like for ice skating?
Oh, yeah. We had an ice skating rink right over there where the housing is, right by the bridge across to the Lower Lake Trail
system.
Oh,
by the West Mark.
They could just lift, the power company would just lift the net. They had a little spillway, and they would just, so we had ice all winter long when it was cold, and they could do it on a nice calm night and get us good, and we had homemade boards, shovels to
keep the snow off,
scrape it off, because you get just enough snow to wreck the ice is what would happen usually, but because then it would warm up and stick,
right,
and then it would get cold. So we didn't have lots of good outdoor winter playtime in it, usually a little too windy, but we did put in many hours over there ice skating because it was back there enough to be sheltered a little bit from the wind.
Right. And nowadays
they skate up at the school, but that's right out where the wind blows, and they have to go through a major production with the fire engines to bring the water truck and flood it, so it doesn't always get flooded at the appropriate time, because it's got to be calm or it won't freeze smooth enough to skate on.
Right. And does it stay frozen all winter now?
It warms up here.
Yeah.
It's like Juneau.
Yeah.
It doesn't stay cold.
But it used to.
No.
No? Even when you were a kid?
Never stayed cold.
What about your mom? Did she talk about it?
Weather patterns, it would get warm.
Okay.
That's why she'd take us out on a nice
day.
It would get warm and wet and slushy, and then it would freeze and get cold and nasty, but not until it was treacherous underfoot.
Right.
And then we'd get more snow, and it would get warm and melt. I have been just watching the winter in bemusement. It snows, and it's still there the next day. Okay. And the highway department would plow. It plows if there's less than half an inch of snow. So then they pull all that snow together, and you've got a berm to walk over, whereas if they just left it alone, it would melt and go away.
Right. And now, when you would do those plates, did you guys ski or go sledding?
We carried our skis up to Lower Lake almost, because we had brushed out a little ski trail. There was no good place to ski. We'd drive out to Dyea and play on that hill, and they didn't have the road built here, so sometimes we'd play on that road, but mostly we did Dyea with our skis and cross country.
Right.
No downhill.
No, cross country is what I was assuming.
No, but we didn't get very much good ski weather. You could go a whole winter and not have one snowfall that was good enough to ski on.
Okay.
Here. If you lived in Dyea, they get way more. We get 1 inch, they get 4 inches.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
The weather pattern is so different.
Wow, that's interesting.
And lots of times we'll get the wind down the White Pass, but they don't get it out of Dyea.
And could you ski on the frozen Skagway or Dyea rivers?
Never. We used to skate on the Skagway River, but they built it up with rocks and stuff by the bridge. I can't remember why, because I wasn't here when they did it, and it's way too treacherous. There's no ice good enough for
no.
that now. We used to drive out to Lyersville and put our skates on and all the way down to the dump.
Wow.
Which was, and one time we found a dolly frozen in the ice.
The Dolly Varden?
Yeah.
Wow.
And one winter, it was super calm long enough for the reservoir and lower lake to freeze, and the reservoir froze clear, and the ice was like 15, 18 inches deep. Mom would keep us off until it was 12 inches. That's what she learned from the older generation.
Right.
And it was hard to go out on that ice the first couple times because it was like plate glass. All you could see was the mucky bottom.
Oh.
It was fabulous, and we went up every day. We didn't get out of school till 4 o'clock, and we'd light the Coleman lanterns and go up and go skating and then come back down again about 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Wow.
Because it was just like a piece of plate glass just set
and
down
that
on that whole
And that was just one particular
just
year?
Just 1 year.
Do you remember?
My whole life.
Like how old you were?
Yeah, it was 1960, because I got an A on the essay I wrote about it in high school.
Wow. Great.
It was gorgeous. And it lasted for a little over a week. And then it snowed. And we went up and played with our sleds. And we forgot a sled. And it thawed like it does. And when we went back up to get the sled, it was already too far down, had melted down into the ice, and was not salvageable. And so we looked for it for years. We could see it down there for a couple years from the banks.
Well, eventually it probably rotted out.
It did. It just got covered with leaves,
yeah,
like they do. But we all kept hoping there'd be another nice year like that for skating. We didn't even bother going over to the Dewey Lake because the reservoir was so perfect.
Yeah.
Wow. Because we were skaters, we were skiers, we did everything.
Yeah. That was my sense of your family. You were big outdoors people.
Yeah. If it was nice, you drop everything and go.
Yeah.
Because it might not be nice later in the day.
Right.
It usually wasn't. In these long days that we've had a series of, I'm going like, wow, this is great. I've never seen this in my life.
Well, any other changes that you can think of? Or?
Well, we don't have very many crab anymore. We don't have very many shrimp anymore. But I sit out at my cabin and watch the commercial fishermen come in and lay their pots for 6 weeks or more with 20 or 30 pots. Well, gee, I wonder why we don't have them.
I didn't realize there was a commercial season up here this far.
There shouldn't be. It should be strictly subsistence. There aren't enough people. But that's another story. What else can I think of? The birds, the eagles are still here. The magpies are still here. The jays are still here. The robins are still here.
And they all were here when you
they
were growing
were all,
up.
Yeah. The magpies I never noticed till I went to Haines, but I found out later they lived up at the other end of town.
Okay.
And nowadays they come down a little bit. They'll all eat at Debbie's feeder. And the only reason I don't put in a feeder is because there's too many crows, and I'm darned if I'm going to feed crows.
Right.
Not happening.
No.
I want the swallows.
Yeah.
And we had both kinds of swallows. We had barn swallows and the other ones, the purple ones and the green ones. There's two kinds.
I know cliff swallows, but that's not right.
Yeah, yeah, I think it is, mm-hmm, because they had them up. They have them up in the Yukon.
Hmm.
Because one year I had two kinds in my nest. That one of the birds couldn't find the right kind of mate. I had three adults, and two of them were green and one was purple, and they were all feeding the babies.
Hmm.
It was very bizarre. But they're not out at my cabin anymore either.
Hmm.
I don't see swallows. Hmm. I don't see the bats. I've been told we still have bats, but I haven't seen any. Has anybody reported any?
No.
We had them when I was a kid.
You did, okay.
You could see them up at Lower Lake. The bats were along on that walk to the glacier with the big owl.
Mm-hmm.
There were bats out then. And I haven't seen any here for years.
Hmm.
And they were just little guys.
Well, that makes also, I was going to say, we're talking about insects. Mosquitoes has been there. There's always mosquitoes.
There's always mosquitoes.
But is there a change, and are there more or less now, do you think?
I don't know.
I mean, you were saying, you know, like barn swallows maybe ate them, or maybe the bats ate them, but...
We still have lots of mosquitoes, but the biting bugs are so dependent on how warm or wet it is through the summer. One year you have a ton of the little white flies and no-see-ums. Another year it's all deer fly. Another
right.
year it's the horse fly. Another year it's mostly mosquitoes. It's just, and I never watch them closely
right.
enough to correlate it to which one is what. We don't have as much high grass, so maybe that cuts down on something.
You mean in town?
Yeah.
People's lawns and stuff,
yeah.
you mean?
Yeah. And so many, you don't have all those empty lots anymore.
Right.
So, who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? Only the shadow knows.
Well, Betsy, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
If there's anything else you can think of.
Ask about octopus.
Oh, octopus.
When you're talking to other people about water, we found one little octopus on our beach in the 1970s. And those two eels, and that was it.
And you've never seen them since?
No. But the little boys showed me the eels they found, and they were the same kind of eels.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And, of course, the ore terminal, not just the terminal, but the lead-zinc pollution issues in this town. It's sort of not climate change, it's more environmental.
Pollution. Yeah, it's an environmental thing, and it might be exacerbated with the pollution, but who knows?
Yeah.
You know, I still pick the mussels out at our place. I noticed this year I have mussels down in front of my cabin, which I didn't have as many of before, and the seaweed is much thicker on my rocks these last two summers than it's been, because I used to scramble along the rocks all the time.
Right.
When I was younger, it was fun, especially at low tide. That's what you do. You scramble
right.
the rocks. And they're really covered with seaweed, and same with picking the mussels out on the other beach, the north beach on that side. It's got more seaweed, too. You can't see them. And I'm guessing that the proliferation of the seaweed is because it's warmer.
Right. But the mussels seem to be the same?
They're the same mussels, yeah.
Yeah.
They haven't changed. They
okay.
just, and they're better picking on that side. You don't have to go, it's not as steep.
Right.
And you can watch the water coming in better and just be more leisurely about it.
Well, very cool. Fun thing. Oh, the cedars that you were talking about that you and your mom planted.
Yeah.
What type of cedar? Was it yellow or red? Or
yeah. Both.
Both, okay.
She, and the paint got lost over the years and everything. She had cedars from Sitka and cedars from Juneau and cedars from down in Washington State, and I couldn't tell you what is which or where.
No. Well, it's interesting, because I've been wondering whether historically this used to have cedars
no,
in this
forest. Never did. Spruce.
Never did.
Spruce forest right down to the waterfront when Captain Moore got here. And it was apparently the same out at the cabin, but I don't have a single picture of it. I would have loved to have seen what it looked like.
So all these deciduous trees, the cottonwoods and stuff, that's...
From the logging. They did logging over there for lumber for
right.
the town. And pretty well, there's not much in the way of old growth until you get practically down to Sturgill's. And Dye, it's 3 or 4 miles in. And there's old growth timber about 2/3 of the way up AB, too.
Mm-hmm.
But all the rest of it was either logged or burned.
Okay. And then so the
so
cottonwoods
the,
and
yeah.
stuff grew in.
And the cottonwoods in Dye were timbered in the 50s by Hosford. So you've got, that's all new growth. But it's almost harvestable, and the beach is just covered with little spruce trees marching down because there's no horses out there now.
Okay, so that's not climate change, that's just because there's no horses?
Right, because when they had 20 horses out there year-round, they kept everything down, and it's been incredible to watch the difference in that
yeah.
with the shooting stars and the fireweed oh. and everything, because you can see the color from the other
right.
side, and we had horses, so we'd go out there and bring them in the spring.
But so have you noticed with the cottonwoods and everything growing, are they going higher up the mountain than they used to?
Yeah, everything is higher than it used to be. It's just gradually moving up. And we noticed, we took the train trip, which I hadn't been on for a long time, when my son was here last uh-huh. week. We got on the last train of the season, and the little itty-bitty trees getting up into Canada are actually tree-sized, some of them now. Because the first thing I ever noticed on my first train trip was, my God, they don't have any real trees. You know? So, yeah. But that's where you notice. And the variety of fruit trees that people are trying and actually harvesting fruit. This is the first year in 3 years I haven't had fruit off my pear trees.
Huh.
And they take rest like apples do
occasionally. Oh, they do. They don't. Oh, I didn't realize that apple trees, they don't produce every year?
No. They will every second or third or fourth year. They will take a break and rest and relax and recuperate. I've got sweet cherry trees.
So your apple trees, are they, when they do produce, are they producing more or bigger apples? Or
getting nice big apples at this point in time. When I was a kid, all I remember are crab apples and something they called an Anilka. There were probably one or two others, but I wasn't aware of them. But in the last 10 years, all of a sudden, there's all kinds of apple trees around here that are producing.
You're doing fair-sized well.
Fruit. Mine is Honeycrisp, and they're beautiful, absolutely mm-hmm. gorgeous.
Yeah.
But I didn't get fruit like that 30 years ago, and you couldn't keep them alive 30 years ago, hardly. People just didn't grow them because they didn't grow here.
Right. And now they do.
And now they do. Plum trees. I got a wonderful plum tree. This was the first year it didn't produce in about 4 years.
Well, cool. All right. Well, I know you have places to go, and so do I. So,
well,
I appreciate the time.
My next interview is coming here, too.
Oh, well, you're a popular gal.